my fellow Americans, it's me, W again. Time to have an important conversation with my Secretary of Defense. Y'all know him as Mr. Donald Rumpusfeld. Whoa. Don, you're looking kind of tense. You think maybe you ought to switch over that decapitated coffee?
Mr. President, I'm concerned about the situation in Iran. It seems clear at this point that they are working to achieve nuclear fission.
I love fission. I wonder what kind of bait they use.
So nuclear fission, as in making weapons of mass destruction.
You're not going to get me on that one again. You know what they say, fool me once. Shame on you. Fool me twice. You fooled me two times.
Mr. President, that doesn't make any sense. I mean, no offense intended.
None comprehended. By the way, have you seen Condoleezza Rice around? I've been meaning to talk to her ever since she got back from her visit to the People's Republic of China. Here, tell you what, let me call her on my SpongeBob walkie-talkie here. Condi Kane, can you come out here, please? Oh, there you are.
Yes, Mr. President, I'm back, although I did wonder why you sent me to China, of all places.
I just thought it'd be funny to send Rice to China. Irony.
Mr. President, please, sir, we need to discuss the nuclear situation in the Middle East.
Don, are you thinking what I'm thinking?
Bomb, 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 bomb Iran.
Bomb, 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 bomb Iran.
Let's bomb Iran.
Bomb, 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 bomb.
Land on C-SPAN. Now that's the plan.
Ayatollah in a spider hole in Iran.
Bomb, 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 Iran. Nukes we have vowed will not be allowed. Tehran, you keep on messing. You can see a mushroom cloud in Iran.
Bomb, 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 bomb,
please
Iran.
Understand.
Bomb, 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 bomb,
it's not assassination, just premature cremation in Iran.
Bomb, 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 Iran. There's one thing more that we can't ignore. We haven't got the troops to go and fight another war.
Here's a plan.
Bomb, bomb, bomb,
to invade Iran.
Bomb, 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 Iran.
We haven't the resources.
How about if we outsource it?
That's a plan.
Bomb, 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 kaboom!
Thanks for returning to great speeches and interviews on Axis Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman, and we're listening to The Art and Discipline of Nonviolence. Congressman John Lewis talks about the civil rights movement and the part he played in it with Krista Tippett.
I remember when you write about being a student and being exposed to the world of philosophy and theology and reading about the notion of the dialectic and thinking about segregation as a thesis and the fight against desegregation as the antithesis and integration as the synthesis, the end. I wonder how you see that now, because, you know, what does the dialectic start all over? And what?
Well, I don't think it necessarily start all over again. But I had a wonderful teacher when I was at American Baptist College. His name was John Lewis Powell. And he would start discussing this idea of the thesis and the antithesis and the synthesis. And he would run around the board, the blackboard, writing and jumping. And that's what the struggle had been all about, to bring these competing forces together, bring human beings together,
mm-hmm.
and create a sense of community, to create a sense of family, that out of the good is already there, the love is there. How do you make it real? How do you paint the picture? It's like an artist using a canvas. How do you get people to move from maybe A to B, and you get C, or from 1 to 2, and get 3? That you're on a path, and you have to be consistent, and you have to be persistent.
And patient.
And patient.
Right.
And it's all about being faithful, being honest, being open.
It's so clear with every accomplishment of humanity, and certainly with the civil rights movement, that so much change, important change, good change happened, and yet there's still much more work to do. Unforeseen complications appear, setbacks appear, that even all the best things we do remain imperfect and incomplete. How do you think about that and about where the movement is in terms of your faith?
Well, I think about it. But you have to believe there may be setbacks. There may be some disappointments. There may be some interruption. But again, you have to take the long, hard look. With this belief, mm-hmm. It's going to be okay. It's going to work out. If it failed to happen during your lifetime, then maybe, not maybe, but it will happen in somebody's lifetime. But you must do all that you can do while you occupy this space.
Okay.
During your time. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I feel that I'm not doing enough to try to inspire another generation of people to find a way to get in the way, to make trouble, good trouble. I just make a little noise.
I think you embody the things that you speak and that we watch you as much as hear you. You move your feet. So, John Lewis, I want to thank you so much for the life you've lived and for this conversation we've been able to have with you this afternoon.
Well, thank you very much. I enjoyed it. Thank you.
The time will come when we will not confine our marching to Washington. We will march through the South, through the streets of Jackson, through the streets of Danville, through the streets of Cambridge, through the streets of Birmingham.
A young John Lewis, then head of the Early Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, speaking at the March on Washington 50 years ago this year.
When we will march with the spirit of love and with the spirit of dignity that we have shown here today.
I'm gonna live the life I sing about in my song.
John Lewis is now a Democratic congressman from Georgia's 5th District. He's written two great books, Walking with the Wind, a memoir of the movement, and Across That Bridge.
In the crowd, or if I'm alone, on the street, or in...
You can listen to great speeches and interviews on accesssacramento.org, or you can go to greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
Hunger for It may have been his official entry into politics. Speaking for the Goldwater Miller ticket during the campaign of 1964, actor Ronald Reagan addresses the television audience.
The following pre-recorded political program is sponsored by TV for Goldwater Miller on behalf of Barry Goldwater, Republican candidate for President of the United States. Ladies and gentlemen, we take pride in presenting a thoughtful address by Ronald Reagan. Mr. Reagan.
This idea that government is beholden to the people, that it has no other source of power except the sovereign people, is still the newest and the most unique idea in all the long history of man's relation to man. This is the issue of this election. Whether we believe in our capacity for self-government or whether we abandon the American Revolution and confess that a little intellectual elite in a far distant capital can plan our lives for us better than we can plan them ourselves. Well, I think it's time we ask ourselves if we still know the freedoms that were intended for us by the Founding Fathers. In this vote harvesting time, they use terms like the Great Society, or as we were told a few days ago by the President, we must accept a greater government activity in the affairs of the people. The full power of centralized government, this was the very thing the Founding Fathers sought to minimize. They knew that governments don't control things. A government can't control the economy without controlling people. And they know when a government sets out to do that, it must use force and coercion to achieve its purpose. They also knew, those founding fathers, that outside of its legitimate functions, government does nothing as well or as economically as the private sector of the economy. No nation in history has ever survived a tax burden that reached a third of its national income. Today, 37 cents out of every dollar earned in this country is the tax collector's share. And yet our government continues to spend $17 million a day more than the government takes in. For three decades, we've sought to solve the problems of unemployment through government planning. And the more the plans fail, the more the planners plan. Well, now, if government planning and welfare had the answer, and they've had almost 30 years of it, shouldn't we expect government to read the score to us once in a while? Shouldn't they be telling us about the decline each year in the number of people needing help, the reduction in the need for public housing? But the reverse is true. Each year the need grows greater, the program grows greater. We were told 4 years ago that 17 million people went to bed hungry each night. Well, that was probably true. They were all on a diet. But now we're told that 9.3 million families in this country are poverty-stricken on the basis of earning less than $3,000 a year. Welfare spending 10 times greater than it was in the dark depths of the Depression. We're spending $45 billion on welfare. Now do a little arithmetic and you'll find that if we divided the $45 billion up equally among those 9 million poor families, we'd be able to give each family $4,600 a year. And this, added to their present income, should eliminate poverty. Direct aid to the poor, however, is only running about $600 per family. It would seem that someplace there must be some overhead. Yet any time you and I question the schemes of the do-gooders, we're denounced as being against their humanitarian goals. They say we're always against things, we're never for anything. Well, the trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so. Now, we're for a provision that destitution should not follow unemployment by reason of old age. And to that end, we've accepted Social Security as a step toward meeting the problem. But we're against those entrusted with this program when they practice deception regarding its fiscal shortcomings. When they charge that any criticism of the program means that we want to end payments to those people who depend on them for a livelihood. We're for aiding our allies by sharing of our material blessings with those nations which share in our fundamental beliefs. But we're against doling out money government to government, creating bureaucracy, if not socialism, all over the world. We set out to help 19 countries. We're helping 107. We've spent $146 billion. With that money, we bought a $2 million yacht for Haile Selassie. We bought dress suits for Greek undertakers, extra wives for Kenya government officials. We bought 1,000 TV sets for a place where they have no electricity. In the last 6 years, 52 nations have bought $7 billion worth of our gold, and all 52 are receiving foreign aid from this country. No government ever voluntarily reduces itself in size, so government programs once launched never disappear. Actually, a government bureau is the nearest thing to eternal life we'll ever see on this earth.
We've already donated to Haiti. It's called the U.S. Income Tax.
The man on the radio can hardly catch his breath, describing my life, prescribing my death. His voice of disgust, spewing hate and mistrust. He feels he's above the law. This is the battle of Rush Limbaugh, the native son of a lawyer from the Shoshone State. He rose to stoop to infamy and hate. Born with a silver spoon on a feather bed, privilege and prestige dancing in his head. He feels he's above the law. This is the ballad of Rush Limbaugh.
Me and my sweet wife Marty was standing up there. Heard a white man say, I don't want no Negroes up there. He was a bush boy man. Woo, living in a bush boy town. I got a bush boy blues, I'm gonna bed in it all around. This is the home of the brave, the land of the free. I don't want to be mistreated by no bourgeoisie, Lord, in a bush boy town. Ooh, it's a bush boy town. I got a bush boy blues, I'm gonna wear the news all around.
Not long ago, the Congresses were liberal democratic.
They all hugged trees.
Banned DDTs.
Refused to be pragmatic.
Then voters said, our state is red, our message is emphatic.
We want some moral values and a Congress theocratic.
We're super zealous radicals against all things atrocious.
We like Fox News.
They share our views.
Ann Coulter is precocious.
If you cross me, you'll quickly see that we can be ferocious. We're super zealous radicals against all things atrocious.
Hold on here. Hey, wait. You know, you don't have a corner on moral values, all right? Our state is blue. We don't like you. We won't give folks a fair chance.
We'll brag to you of our IQ while yours is like a pear plant.
We've got degrees like PhDs. We don't like your unfair rants.
You started wars, and what's more, you don't like SpongeBob SquarePants.
We're the super jealous far out left who'd like to run the nation.
You clear the way.
You wish no way.
It's classic confrontation.
Yet you all see the irony is most folks in the nation
are super cautious people who could use some moderation.
I don't want to be a soldier. I don't want to kill and maim another mother's son or daughter. Imperial war is a dirty game. I don't want, to be a soldier. Steal some other people's wealth, invade their homes and their nation. This is how I've always felt. I call upon the world's millions. No more war in our name. Stop this madness. Stop the killing, stop the suffering and the pain.
I don't want
to be a soldier.
Be a soldier.
Murder children in foreign lands. Bomb and terrorize all those families. So for peace, I'll take my stand. So I don't want to be a soldier.
Be a soldier.
I don't want to kill and maim,
to kill and maim
another mother's son or daughter.
Son or daughter.
George Bush's war is a dirty game. George Bush's war is a dirty game.
And now for something completely different.